Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, May 7th. Thanks for joining us. I'm April Austin, reading for Linda Feldman.
And I'm Ken Kaplan.
The cicadas are coming. Time to pull out the frying pan. For those excited about the insects that will soon emerge from underground in the eastern United States, a once every 17-year phenomenon, it's an opportunity to tantalize the palate. Yes, cicadas are edible, as are many insects, and an excellent source of protein. Recipes are circulating online. Cultural norms are being reevaluated, and we're all being encouraged to eat less meat to address climate change. I know I'll be snacking on a few. Retired entomologist Michael Raup told the Monitor's Dwight Weingarten as he reported a story on cicada life lessons. Somehow, eating a creature that can offer life lessons feels wrong. But it's really the ick factor that turns off most Americans from eating insects. When a college friend returned from a Peace Corps stint in what was then Zaire in the early 1980s, he brought back a big plastic bag of dried over a fire grasshoppers. "Try one," Bruce offered. We hesitated and finally relented. Crunchy, maybe a little bitter. I didn't gag, but I also didn't go for seconds. Almost 40 years later, Bruce reminisces enthusiastically about all the insects he ate. Crickets, termites, flying ants, palm beetle grubs the size of your thumb, and how he learned to overcome his bias. "Much of the world finds bugs of one sort or another a great treat," Bruce writes in an email. "It's all in our heads, we Westerners." Now, today's stories. Our first story. True leadership often involves making hard choices. President Biden's support for a vaccine patent waiver received mixed reviews, but it signaled a U.S. intent to return to global moral leadership.
When President Joe Biden announced Wednesday that the United States would support a World Trade Organization emergency waiver of COVID-19 vaccine patents, the decision was about more than the right thing to do. For some global experts and analysts, the decision reflects something else as well. Mr. Biden's vision, sharpened over his first 3 months in office, of reasserting U.S. global leadership. The larger message the president is sending with the vaccine waiver, some experts say, the coronavirus pandemic is the latest and most urgent of a list of global challenges that will require a strong and complex multilateral response, and the U.S. intends to reclaim the mantle of leader on those issues. J. Stephen Morrison at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington says, "I see this as an important signal that we're stepping up our international engagement and intend to put the U.S. back in the driver's seat of the multilateral system." He adds, "This is not saying international property rights are not important. It's saying the U.S. is not leaving the solution to market forces, and that political leadership needs to step up and shape the future on this." This story was reported by Howard LaFranchi for The Monitor.
What happens when a lawmaker's principles and her voters' wishes are at odds with one another? Liz Cheney has refused to embrace what she calls the big lie, even though it may cost her GOP leadership position.
Just a few months ago, Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney beat back an attempt to oust her from Republican leadership after she cast what she described as a vote of conscience to impeach former President Donald Trump for his role in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. That victory may have been short-lived. Now, Ms. Cheney's insistence on refuting Mr. Trump's unproven claims of election fraud, which polls show a majority of Republican voters believe, is once again imperiling her political future. Even some erstwhile supporters say they would prefer to see her directing her firepower against President Joe Biden's $6 trillion progressive agenda, not fist-bumping him on the floor of the House while characterizing Mr. Trump as a threat to democracy. The rift has raised new questions, among them whether it is an abrogation of a leader's duty to take a sustained stand for principle that conflicts with the will of her voters and fellow lawmakers. Former Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson, who has known Ms. Cheney since she was a little girl, says he believes she'll prevail in 2022, but if not, she won't regret her decision. He says she's going to put this down as a badge of courage. The story was reported by Krista Case Bryant in Washington for The Monitor.
First, restaurant workers were laid off and reaped special pandemic jobless benefits. Now eateries are desperate to hire them back. Could all this be leading toward better pay in a difficult industry?
Amid a nationwide labor shortage that's affecting his industry, Ian Davis bluntly says, "These are desperate times." Just 4 miles away from his sushi restaurant on Tybee Island, Georgia, a crab shack is offering $3,000 signing bonuses. Some restaurant owners and economists think generous jobless benefits have chilled the hiring process. At the same time, persistent school closures and limited childcare prevent many others from leaving home, and some workers have simply moved on to other industries. On Friday, the Labor Department reported a surprisingly low gain of just 266,000 jobs nationwide in April, with economists attributing the weakness partly to a tight supply of willing workers. A potential silver lining? It's possible the circumstances create an impetus to improve pay and working conditions for the longer term. Ben Falecha, director of operations at the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association, says, "This crisis of trying to find employees to even staff your place, I think it's raising the bar for a lot of different restaurants to say, we have to think of our model and what can we do to not just attract people, but to keep them here." This story was reported by Patrick Johnson in Tybee Island, Georgia, and Noah Robertson in Alexandria, Virginia, for The Monitor.
What happens when threats to democratic norms have democratic support? That familiar, difficult dilemma is playing out in El Salvador, critics of the country's wildly popular president say.
2 years ago, when El Salvador's president Nayib Bukele was elected, there were three separate branches of government in the country, says Jeff Thayil, president of the Washington Office on Latin America. Now, Mr. Thayil says, there's one. Last weekend, when El Salvador's newly elected legislature took its seats, it voted to dismiss 5 Supreme Court justices and the Attorney General, replacing them with Bukele sympathizers. The move prompted concern from critics at home and officials abroad who had already feared the young president was adopting an authoritarian leadership style. Those hoping El Salvador can bolster its democratic institutions face a difficulty: the government's popularity. Mr. Bukele himself enjoys approval ratings of nearly 90%, and his alliance now holds a supermajority in the Legislative Assembly. Still, there are levers for change, observers say, pointing to past examples. Other countries in the region started down those paths toward concentrating power in one branch or another, says Leonor Arteaga Rubio, previously a deputy in the Salvadoran Office of the Human Rights Ombudsman. They aren't perfect parallels, but due to some kind of intervention, most often citizen, sometimes international, they were able to get their democracies back on course. This story was reported by Whitney Ulick in Mexico City and Carmen Escobar in San Salvador, El Salvador, for The Monitor.
Finding the right rules of engagement between people and animals is key to bringing endangered species back to healthy numbers. One corner of the Gulf Coast is trying to get it right.
Last month, endangered whooping cranes laid eggs in Texas for the first time since the 1800s, a sign that recent reintroduction efforts have made slow but steady progress. Globally, whooping cranes now number over 800, with 2 of the largest populations in the United States living near Corpus Christi, Texas, and in southwest Louisiana. Whooping cranes prefer to live in big, shallow, freshwater marshes. They're vulnerable to predation and take a relatively long time to reproduce. Years may go by before a pair successfully raise a chick. Sarah Zamorski, a biologist with the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, says, "Everything with whooping cranes takes time, so we're still somewhat on the front end of this whole thing, but we're seeing some progress." Challenges do remain. People have shot and killed 14 cranes in the Louisiana group, which for a population of about 75 is a sizable loss. Public awareness and education are priorities for local conservationists and government agencies moving forward. But the progress is encouraging. The species has increased roughly 50-fold in 80 years. "They're resilient," says Wade Harrell of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. "The species is on a comeback." This story was reported by Henry Gass in Irving, Texas, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on how India is lightening its crisis. For journalists in India, these are head-twisting days. The government's failure to deal with the surge in coronavirus cases has turned the news media's attention to a part of society that has responded well: the millions of volunteers and small-scale donors who are assisting sick and destitute people during a COVID-19 wave. For a country that has long ranked relatively low in charitable giving, India is coming on strong in weaving new levels of public trust. The Economist reports, "There is an impressive supply of ordinary citizens, charities, private companies, and even the odd public servant taking their own initiatives to mitigate the crisis." Worldwide, levels of trust in government and news media declined last year, according to a survey by Edelman Communications. But trust in nonprofits remains high, notably for their ethical practices, such as transparency, honesty, and public purpose. Trust restores balance and enables partnership, the Edelman survey found. As the world watches India cope with a virus surge, it can also be witness to a society strengthening its social bonds. People are healing in more ways than one. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thank you for joining us today. Please come back Monday when Linda Feldman will explore the question, is politics the new religion? Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how understanding and feeling God's love for her spiritual children can inspire our interactions with others. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Erica Page.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.